This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 492, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
When you were here before, you couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You flow like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so very special. But I'm a creep.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 492. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm still here.
Damn it.
Does this mean you're going to be returning permanently? When's the video show coming back?
I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, Connor. And Josh Flanagan.
Hey.
I knew it was coming, and it gets me every time. We are iFanboy, and we like comics. Every week, we read a stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week, and then we'll talk about that book, other books, some other stuff, maybe read some email. You never know what may happen. But we're going to warn you that there are spoilers. This is a review show, so we're going to talk about exactly, literally, the words in the comic books that tell you what happened in them. So be warned. This week, I did not have the pick.
Oh.
Josh had the pick. I'm glad to see the script era continued.
You know, with just two of us, it got a little better. but I knew there was going to be some in this because I was doing it while taking care of children.
All right.
It's always your cheese.
Yeah, always.
Pick of the week this week, and there was honestly there's no question about it. And this is four pages into it. Is Airboy number two? Also, Airboy number one was pick of the week last time, and there was a big weenus on the second page.
Just flapping the breeze.
Flapping. That's where I was getting at. Moving realistically is what I was gonna say.
Yes.
Someone who has a penis, I know that was slapping thigh to thigh as he ran.
Yeah, yeah. Not comfortably.
No.
I don't believe that he's fully. Anyway, he's in a mid. He's got more heft, is what I'm getting at. So that's going to make that worse. We said a lot of things about this book last time, and all of those things are still true. I just felt like that last issue, it wasn't really a story there. It was just sort of look at this. And this second one, we're sort of getting an idea of where the story is and what it's going. And, it, you know, if anything, it was more raw and more bold, I suppose.
We have the amplifier of now you've got Airboy in the world.
Right.
So now things are really crazy.
And I think that – so here's the thing about it is I think that what that character tends to do is ramp up the – I don't know if shame is the right word. I think shame is – close to the
I know. I think shame is you're definitely in the shame arena.
Yeah, that
shame adjacent.
So you've got a guy, and we're going to focus on James Robinson's script to start. But you've got a guy who's basically coming clean about a lot of stuff in a very exaggerated and extreme way in some ways, and I think in others perhaps not. And so you've got a guy who is known for doing, he's known as the Golden Age guy. His, you know, the Golden Age was one of his early breakout hits. And so, you know, doing the Greatest Generation, doing those kind of characters is the thing that he sort of gets typecast as doing. So now you take that and you put it up against who he sort of is portraying himself in, quote unquote, real life. I don't know what that was.
I would really like that as you approach 40, you get a really strong lisp.
Yeah. I think it's time for a speech impediment. I think that would make me feel great.
Nothing against people with speech impediments. I would just like to have you to have one.
Yeah, because you know that would mortify me. but when you take that contrast of this
way.
Stop. I just...
Sorry. Have I mentioned how much I've missed this? All right, go on. I'm sorry. Go on. Let's be serious.
No, I think that like Airboy serves as a contrast. So like he's known for this kind of character. So what happens when this kind of character and this kind of aesthetic, I guess, that is part of his known as part of his work, meets up with this vision, this version of himself, this sort of hyper stylized version of himself, and I think that's really interesting. And it's one thing to look at this as a book that is like crazy over the top. It's like how people describe, I guess Garth Ennis is good. Like it's gross out swearing. What, you know, like it's not though.
Well, I think that's what people would think if they don't actually understand what's going on in the book.
Yeah.
Which is there's a deep dive into his psyche and his insecurities. I mean, it keeps coming back to his DC work.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yep.
There's no point in having that conversation smack in the middle of the issue. I think it's actually the middle of the issue. No, it's the page after.
It was very specific.
Unless that's really the kind of the whole point of this exercise is his insecurity about the quality of his writing, and that's
which is
the quality of himself too. But that's really, this is an examination of his psyche.
Yeah, and this is a,
or his fears.
Yeah, and if you know, you don't have to know James, but if you've followed him on, you know, social media or whatever, he's fairly straightforward about what he feels like is going on with it. So there's a lot of truth in there. I guess,
and the thing is, there's a lot of truth, but there's also a lot of, and you guys talked about it with the first issue or whatever, but there's also a lot of honesty, mm-hmm. and
it usually goes with truth. It's a
right, but an honesty in the juxtaposition, in that James is putting himself out there, and he is not the protagonist in this.
No,
I mean, I guess he is the protagonist, but like
the protagonist, but not the good guy.
Yeah, the joke's on him in this, especially in this issue, you know, which I find fascinating, you know.
So. Yeah, he's it's definitely a thing where he's not we're not supposed to be admiring him. We're not supposed to do as he does. I mean, there's a lot of horrible things that are going on. And I don't know. Like, I think that if you look back at the thing that James Robinson did that I enjoyed the most, the thing that was the closest to, you know, and he said this at the time, you know, we're talking about Starman. He put the most of himself in that character. And this is, to me, it's like a really brave step in sort of recapturing that I'm going to put as much of myself into this work as possible. And it's not going to be flattering. And, you know, he's doing it with ribaldry, you know, and humor. But it's still there. And I it sings. Like, it totally speaks to me. I think you're probably have read a lot about it on the internet, but there's some talk about the words used in this, the word tranny, this and that. And I got to that word and I thought, well, that's going to take away from what we're doing here. I think a little bit, which I think is sort of what happened. But I also think that I don't think that's the intention. I don't think that's where it's coming from. And
there's not. And the thing is, like, I feel, you know, it's rough because we're I don't want to say privileged, but I mean, but we happen to.
Some would say that.
I mean,
I mean, let's lay it on the table. I'll admit to that. It's fine.
No, I was just, but I meant in that we, you know, we've interviewed James Robinson. We've interacted with James Robinson. I've hung out with James Robinson socially. I've worked with him professionally. You know, it's kind of thing. And I know that everyone reading this book can't have that same knowledge about James Robinson, the man, but there is not a malicious dot of ink in this book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it is, if you know him and know how he is and you know what he's trying to do with this book, you recognize it for what it is, which is it's really him shitting on himself. And it's this, you know, like, and I don't believe that there's any ill intent.
And further, the point of view of Airboy isn't that he's homophobic, transphobic, or anything. He's from 1940.
Right.
That's not unusual for what would happen, I don't think. But I don't know what's going to happen with it. I kind of refuse to believe that this has lots of ignorance and ill intent involved, basically. I don't think it's coming from a bad place. I think that, you know, you make a choice what words you're going to use, and they're going to have an impact, and I think it backfired a little bit in this instance. But I don't think he was dishonest, if that makes sense. So there's that. Okay, and then the other side of the whole thing is, and it should not even – it shouldn't be ignored at all, is that Greg Hinkle, I don't know where the hell he came from, but he's the greatest thing ever.
Oh, I'll tell you where he came from. He came from I met him outside an Isotope party. He's one. I mean, Greg is – he's been one of those artists that he lived here, been here in San Francisco for a few years. Now he's down closer to you, Connor. Down in, actually, he's right behind you. No, I'm just kidding. No, he's down in the LA area. He's one of those, you know, like, what's great about having a local comics community like we have here in San Francisco is that there are a lot of people who really want to be creators, and Greg's been one of those people who I've watched kind of grow, and he's done work with the writer Jason McNamara. They did a book called The Rattler that was on Kickstarter. It was a very successful Kickstarter. He's doing here and there, and it's been the kind of thing, man, like, man, if he can just get with someone to do something really good and actually produce something, he will be great, and it's great to see that coming true. Like, he, you know, like, he's clearly got talent. He's clearly got chops. He's
throwing everything on these pages. I mean, there's not a corner. There's no wasted space. Yeah. I mean, like, everything is full, and, like, you've got these sort of super hyper realistic cartoony versions of the guys who look like the guys. This is that thing we always talk about when they do movie characters or whatever. And we're like, whether they look like photos or they just look like representations of them. Like, he's got that down, but he's also got, like, this looks like San Francisco. He's nailed that. Like, it's. Yeah. It's like really being there, so that's really cool.
Look at the expression on their faces when they realize they're getting a blowjob next to each other. I mean, that was my favorite panel of the week. It made me laugh and laugh and laugh.
Yeah,
he has those faces down. And what's really exciting about this book is that now they've swapped places, and Greg and James Robinson have entered Airboy's world of Nazi robots and superheroes fighting the war.
Yeah, so that was – and then finally, that was the last thing that I was like, oh, okay, we've did that. Now we have to go the other way. And I just think that's a really great choice. It's an obvious choice after the fact. And at the same time, he can draw a hell of a German plane.
Yeah, he really does. But I think it's built upon. I mean, a lot of the gist of the issue is Airboy coming to terms with him being in today, in 21st century, and, you know, getting pulled from the 40s in a world where they're fighting Nazis for freedom, and then it's just like, oh, so the Nazis won? and like, no, we won. He's like, well, why is it so dirty here? You know, like, just, you know, and like the idea of, like, if you took someone from, you know, not that I think the 40s were any cleaner, but like the idea of, like,
it was actually dirtier.
Yeah, I think it actually was. Well, I don't know. San Francisco's pretty dirty. but it was interesting to see that you know, interpretation of what now is like. And from somebody like that, I thought that was really cool. And then, of course, like you said, it seems obvious in an afterthought that then they go back to his time or his place, which is fascinating. So, yeah.
So, it's great. People just walk up to you offering you pot brownies like this?
Yes,
I was gonna say that. I did not believe that. The thing that I believed less was when he said San Fran. Yeah, than that,
too, which I wanted to call and be like, "What are you talking?"
I was looking at it and thinking about it. I think it was a lettering choice.
Yeah.
If you look at how the word balloon is, there was no way to put San Francisco without making it weird.
Yeah.
That was where I came to on that, and it was better than Frisco.
Yeah, oh, that's for sure. Oh, but No, but I mean, controversy aside and whatever, you know, this book is good and is unlike anything that's out there. And, you know, when it's all said and done, I think it's going to be like one of those stories. It's like, holy shit, can you believe they did this? You know,
it's my favorite new book right now.
Well, between this and Deadly Class, you got those books shouldn't come out in the same week. It's too
Deadly Class. That character does a lot of bad things too.
But it's too much searing introspection.
Yeah.
In San Francisco.
Yeah.
In San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, exactly. I need to have a drink after reading those two books in a row.
By the way, if anybody out there is listening, Connor's recording from paradise.
Yeah, I am.
So
it's my avian companions. They fly around my head in circles.
Just try to mute when they feed you grapes, okay?
So this week we also had a big new release. We had We Stand on Guard, the new book from Brian K. Vaughan and Steve. How do you speak this? They really liked this book. Is it Steve Scroci?
Scroci.
And Matt Hollingsworth on Colors, Photographics, and Letters. And
I love his work on Time in a Bottle.
So this was interesting. In this issue, so it opens in a little bit in the future with a terrorist attack on the White House and a family in Canada watching the news on their giant TV and wondering what's going to happen, where the U.S. is going to attack in retaliation. And it turns out they're going to attack Canada as they drop a whole bunch of bombs on Ottawa. And
finally, someone takes a stand against Ottawa.
And it ends up killing all the family except for
Ottawa.
The kids, and we jump forward again as the little daughter is much older and now part of the resistance movement in Canada fighting against the Americans, and that's the setup for We Stand on Guard.
I will tell you, I had a moment where I was like, do we always have to be the bad guys in everything? So I don't know if that's my turn to the conservative side for just a moment. I was like, why does America always have to be the dicks? it's interesting though. I don't know where this is going to go.
The dicks, we just know from Canada's perspective. What
yeah, I was
going to
say it's too
it.
Early.
They Maybe. Might deserve it, and frankly, odds are they deserve it.
Sorry, I gotta say, I didn't expect this book. It doesn't seem like a Brian K. Vaughan book yet.
Never expect the Inquisition, Josh.
I know that, but I have no idea where this is going to go or even where it came from, you know, in that sense. Like, when Saga came out, which is completely strange, you know, I was like, okay, yeah, no, I understand. This makes sense from the writer that I know. This is really interesting.
Is this a mini, Ron?
Yes, I believe it's a mini series.
And in case, I don't know if people listening know who Steve Scroci is anymore. He used to do a lot more comics, but
no, he didn't do a lot more comics. He did some comics.
Oh well, he did comics a long time ago, but he did I think the primary production design work for the Matrix movies. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the storyboard. Yeah, basically. So he burst on the scene like in the mid-90s, and it was one of those things where, like, you know, when you see an artist and it's unlike anything else that's out there, it's like a style that's totally different. And he had done some X-Men stuff. He did a Gambit redesign, if I remember correctly. That just looked awesome. And then he jumped over and started working with Liefeld and was doing Youngblood stuff. And then got snatched up by the Wachowskis,
yeah.
and has been in movie land ever since. So this is, yeah, I don't know when the last time he did any comics was.
Yeah,
me either,
but it took me a little bit to remember, oh, it's that guy. And at first I wasn't sure if I liked it. Then we got to the giant mech battle and I was like, well, hell yeah.
Yeah.
it was a really cool big action sequence, with this sort of futuristic, you know, just near future sci-fi world. And, it's really interesting. I like the guy, the Quebecois guy who only speaks French and I kind of know what he's saying, but like nobody, you know, if you don't know any French, you're just on your own.
Right.
Which I love. Because I've got to tell it all through context or acting or whatever.
I mean, of course, it's funny because it's like, we, you know, BKV is one of the top writers in the industry, and it was great to see Steve Scroci come back. I was surprised by the violence in this. Well, not the violence, but just, well, not the violence. No, but like the...
Why the Last Man?
No, not surprised by the violence, but just like, I guess, the gore or just like the representation of violence. I was like, whoa, I was like, that was, you know, that was it. And then at the end of the first issue, I'm like, I didn't love this the way I loved the first issue of Saga I mean, it was good, you know, but it wasn't like, holy shit, you've got to read this, you know.
And
so,
I think that's the part, I mean, like, it didn't have whatever that Brian K. Vaughan is.
He has set the bar very high for himself. And this was, I thought this was a very solid... good comic. If this had been any other writer, we'd be very excited about this new person. But it's him, and so he's got a high bar. And
that's
the problem with being so awesome all the time.
Well, yeah. I'm gonna read it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
I want to see him get what's coming to him. They drive up the prices on maple syrup. You know they do, Josh.
Oh, I see what's going on. Listen, we've had a couple of bad winters for syrup production. So, when you can only, it takes like, 10,000 gallons of syrup of what's the sap to make a gallon of syrup. So,
syrup.
Josh, or as my 2-year-old son used to say, e-poop. That was the word for syrup. So, it's adorable.
So, Josh, this is the last issue of Satellite Sam.
This is the last issue. Connor, Ron, can we confirm that this is the last issue of Satellite Sam?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Because I got to tell you, that's a limb I don't like to go out on anymore.
I go out on it now on a whim.
It's just Amazing Spider-Man 4 is the last issue.
Satellite Sam 15 wraps up the first volume of this, right? They're going to do another volume. It's set in L.A., from what I read.
Yeah.
And, I long ago sort of lost the thread of the stories, and a lot of the characters looked way too similar, but I really enjoyed the general world and atmosphere of this.
I felt like that too, but I actually ended up picking it up again at some point. Like, I had definitely lost him. Like, I don't know what's going on anymore. And then as they sort of zeroed in on this ending and we focused going forward, I felt like I sort of got where we were going again, and because there were I think we narrowed it down to a few storylines and tied some things together, and they were interesting. They were really good. End of the day with this, I think the setting was super interesting. This sort of turning point in media, in culture, and celebrity, combined with the society of 50s America, and then, we used to always talk about good Chaykin. This is freaking exemplary Chaykin. This is A+ premium cut choice Chaykin. Straight up. The sexiest book on the stands. It's beautiful. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I went all the way through and didn't sort of get out when I was a little bored in the middle.
The highlight of this was when some of the characters make the move to LA and suddenly the book goes from black and white to color. I thought that was a nice little choice
there. Which is also representative of the change in the industry, right, exactly. And it's a metaphor, Connor.
It's a metaphor.
That's
and then it goes back to perhaps the most bleak scene in the entire series, the final two pages. Ugh.
Yep.
Good book though.
So this is the last issue
of this volume.
Of this volume.
Correct.
Last issue.
Confirmed.
Saying it's the last. We won't be able to ask you these things for long. Eventually,
I'm out of the loop. So yeah.
I had a question actually. I was going to ask you. It was a real question. Is there a chance that a book could get printed in Image that nobody from Image has read?
What? Is it like a sound of one hand clapping kind of thing?
Yeah. No, I mean, just like say that like you've been doing a book for a while. Somebody turns in their book and you just send it to print.
No, so it's going to pass through. It's going to pass through at least one person.
So there's.
It's supposed to at least when I was there, it was supposed to go through at least two people. But sometimes that doesn't happen. But yeah.
So that's the anti-Nazi manifesto.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Contingent. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
So that is in place.
There are checks and balances. Yes, there
okay.
are.
That's yeah. what I. Okay.
Yep.
So. I figured. I just wanted to be. I wanted to confirm that. I guess.
Hypothetically. Yeah.
So. Now see. There's. Anyway.
Yeah. So after when we're done recording, I'll tell you. But yeah. So since this is only my second show back, this is my first opportunity to talk about the Star Wars books that Marvel are putting out, and how I'm loving Kieran Gillen and on Darth Vader.
Are you reading all of them? Some of them.
I'm reading the main book, the Jason Aaron book. I'm reading Vader, and that is it.
And Darth Vader. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Yes. That's the only two I'm reading. I picked up the first issue of Leia, and I went,
Same.
And then I'm unsure if I will read Lando.
Well.
Yeah. But but what I found fascinating about this Darth Vader book is when Star Wars came out with Cassidy and Art, and then Vader came out with LaRocca, actually I was lucky enough that Kieran Gillen sent me the first issue before it came out. I was like, holy cow, look at what LaRocca's doing. Like, this is great, whatever. And then now 7 issues in, I'm reading it. I don't know if it's the schedule or whatever. He still draws a great Vader, but I had to take issue with his stormtroopers.
I'm looking.
They just seemed a little. There's that one shot of Vader and the stormtrooper shooting.
Mm-hmm.
it's on the left side of the page when Vader says it's pointless to resist. And I'm like, oh, those are a little scrawny stormtroopers.
Hmm.
I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe
I don't think it's. I got to say, like, if there was, it turns out if there was ever a book for a guy,
yeah, it's
this book for that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's worked out pretty well.
But this issue I thought was interesting in that, you know, Vader returns to the Lars homestead on Tatooine, and you get a lot of Vader standing looking at the sunsets, and then him putting together the pieces of you know, that this is where Luke lived and where Obi-Wan hit him and stuff like that. That's the kind of stuff that I eat up like a dork. So
I think when we talked about these books before, there's a super fine line,
yeah,
about what's okay and what's not. And I really tend to – this one I put sort of in the crazy fan fiction category, which helps me enjoy it more.
Yep.
It's kind of like droid violence torture porn and and just sort of weird. That one of the things is – and oddly enough, one of the things that I like about this book is that I think sort of by necessity, Gillen has to embrace the prequels to a certain extent because that's where most of Darth Vader's story lives.
Yep.
And so like the cover – that is the poster from episode one.
Yeah.
So he just kind of has to own it. And ironically, I actually seem to really like that. I'm like, all right, work with it. See what you can do.
Yeah.
Make him say we. Who cares? So it's kind of okay if I don't take it. If I remember not to take it seriously at all.
Yep.
And I remember not to relate it to the things that I really like. It doesn't bother me. And I do like the idea of sort of answering the question if Vader's up to some shady shit all over the place because they're Sith. And of course they have to because there can be only two and one of them's got to take the other one over.
And I like that he's got murder droids.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
You know, that he's got a 3PO-esque and an R2 and an astromech droid that are just set on killing, which is just awesome.
It must be a lot of fun to write is the thing I thought about those characters.
And you could tell it's a lot of fun to write purely by the name of the letter column, The Empire Writes Back. which honestly is fantastic.
Yeah,
so.
I'll notice that.
Anyway, I'm digging that Vader. I like
it. I'm still reading it. I can't stop. I don't know why.
Connor?
I've dropped all of them.
Wow. I figured.
The older I get, the less angst I want in my life. And if there's easy ways to eliminate angst, I do so. And so I've eliminated all the Star Wars books.
He hasn't called me in months.
Yeah. I only talked to Josh through the show.
Yeah.
But no. I just...
You know what you did!
So, especially this book, which was fun, but the more and more prequels set in, the less I can adhere to my no more prequels in my life rule. So I had to drop this
right. book. Right. Stuff, yeah.
That can only mean one thing. When is the point in the show where I can say how much I hate the new Comixology app? That now?
Sure.
We'll get it. It's fine. I hate it.
So, Josh, last week we talked about Superman and the problems we had with the tone and the characterization of Superman. This week we had Action Comics 42, the second issue from this new arc. And I thought, once this, much like the last issue, this captured what I think is a much truer version of what Superman is.
Greg Pak had no problem with characterization of Clark Kent here.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily the classic sort of take on him, but it's very consistent and it's understandable.
Mm-hmm.
I think I really liked it. I liked this a ton, and then as I kept going through it, and I got to the end, I liked it even more. I thought the sort of, I don't know, this sort of rawness of like you know, Superman's out on the street fighting the cops for the good and
like if you're gonna do that Golden Age Superman, right, the hero of the people, then this is what you got to do. He steps in to save people from a riot and save them from, you know, corrupt cops, and he takes a beating for them. And I couldn't see Superman last week doing that, like a really harsh beating, because he doesn't have his full powers. And then he ends up jumping in and fighting the cops. And as jarring as that image is of Superman punching a cop, it's these are bad cops, and he's fighting for the people, the common people. So.
I also thought it was a really, really interesting burn to get to that point where you, like, right away you've got the citizens of the street, you know, like the one woman's trying to get everybody to stay calm so that they're not all beaten and it doesn't start a riot. And there's the one guy and he's like, I want to sit down. He's got the bat and like that's that powder keg. Mm-hmm. And they hold him back a few times and eventually, like, you know, he can't do it. And the whole time is that in Superman's head, he's like, I am not strong enough for that. I'm not invulnerable anymore. I'm not, you know, so it's all like the thing about Superman, you know, one of the rules about him in my mind is always that even without his powers, he's still Superman.
Yep.
That's what this is.
Right.
Even without his powers, he's still Superman.
His powers don't make him Superman.
Right. Which I think is the right call. Really enjoy this. You know, I have, it's, it's gotten better all the way through. This is one of those Superman series that we've sort of asked for and don't get very often. Where like the writer and artist really click, and you know, over time it gets better and better as they sort of know what they're doing, even with the wild shifts in, you know, what's going on in DC at the time.
I couldn't even tell you.
I know, I couldn't either. But it's
I
still
will
a
say
thing
that actually what's interesting about Cooter's art is I thought it had a little bit of a Chris Burnham feel.
I caught that, yeah.
Which is interesting.
Definitely.
He started off as a quietly guy, and he's sort of moving more into the Chris Burnham.
They're on a continuum. They're not.
Right, but it is a continuum. It's interesting. But I will eventually want to get back to Superman not solar flaring at the beginning of a story arc and spending the whole arc without powers.
Yeah. I think that's them using what they've been given to tell the story they want to tell. But it can't
go on. Sure, I'm not blaming the creative team. I'm just looking forward to when DC's okay with him having all his powers.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would have been really interesting if there was just some sort of organic way to depower him some.
Well, this we talked about it before. This should have been the way they started the New 52 with him without,
right,
with not all of his powers and slowly getting them.
Yep.
And then that'd have been fine.
But then they time jumped all over the place and we didn't get to tell that story.
As long as the suit doesn't come back.
I know. He can stand around in this t-shirt and jeans all he wants. Forever and ever. He'd grow the beard back or not. I don't care.
Whoa. We know we are pro-beard.
I know, but the beard, what it is that the beard offset the awfulness of that uniform.
That's true.
And so here, he doesn't need it as much.
That's true.
Like here, he might look like a dick. Like with his t-shirt and jeans and a beard, I might not like him. It's all about balance. What's his name? Oh, I can't remember. The Dan Hip alternate cover.
Yes.
Like that.
These alternate covers have been fantastic.
They have been. It was a good Darwin one last month, I think.
Yeah. Let's take a real quick break to tell you about ifanboy.com/support. That is the handy page to find all of the ways you can help the show continue on every week. And the first way to do that is go to the Amazon link. That's where you can make your Amazon purchases as you would normally. You don't lose any money. Amazon gives a little bit of their money to us, and everyone's happy, especially you. You got your item. You've participated in the consumerist culture. So I'm sure you feel good about that.
Could lose some money, but we wouldn't be responsible for that, I think.
The other way to help us is go to the membership link on that page. That's where for $3 a month to $30 a year, you can become an iFanboy member, help the show directly out by becoming a member. And we appreciate all the people who do that. They are the bread and butter, the backbone of this. I'm going to just throw a lot of metaphors out there. They are the people that keep the show going and have for many years. We thank all of them. And finally, on that page, you'll find a donation button. That's where you can donate any money you want. You don't have to become an iFanboy member and do it every month. You can just do it once. If you're a crazy billionaire and you feel like you need to give us some money because we've made your life better, that's also okay too. We'll accept that. Anything to help the show, go to ifanboy.com/support.
We are open to an eccentric benefactor.
We are.
We've been saying it for years, and I just feel like they're not getting the message, so we're going to have to keep hammering it, unfortunately, everyone else.
We'll do the show from your house.
That's a little weird.
Well, you know, if they want to make $1 million donation, I'll do the show from their house.
Okay.
Not their private island, but from a house.
Oh, maybe. Right. These are all things that we're going to have to think about. I think we should probably table it as an on-air discussion.
Okay. Secret Wars number 4.
Are you guys reading Secret Wars, or am I the only one who...
Oh, it was pick of the week. Josh, I don't think he's been listening to the show.
I have not. How beautiful is Esad Rubik?
It's beautiful.
He's tall.
It's gorgeous.
You mean the art.
Yeah.
He's a beautiful man, too.
This book continues to be the best thing Marvel's publishing right now.
Yeah.
It's crazy, it's big, it feels crazy and big, but the characterizations are still all there, so you feel connected to it in a way I don't feel connected to anything else that Marvel's publishing right now.
It really feels like the last as crazy as it is, but it's the last vestige of that through line that we always look for across the line.
Yes.
You know, and it's funny because Hickman always has a serious tone to a lot of stuff he does, but like there is, you know, with Peter Quill making quips about Doctor Strange's keep.
Was it Peter Quill or was it John Constantine?
I think it was Peter Quill.
Because in that panel, I literally thought, "What? Oh, John Constantine. Oh, wait a minute. This is a Marvel book. What?
Yeah.
What?"
But I gotta admit, I'm getting tired. I'm getting a little tired of Cyclops getting shit on.
He's gonna have to get a different uniform for that to change.
All the time. Oh God, so annoying. But no, this is great. This is fantastic. I mean, this is the Secret Wars. This book is nothing what I expected, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, it's really fun. And I like that every issue kind of is a different place and a different thing.
Yeah. And so moving on from that, tying into Secret Wars, we talked a little bit last week about the Battle World books and kind of how silly they are and all that sort of stuff. But you tell me you're going to put out comics that take place in the Extinction Agenda period or the Days of Future Past period? I am there. They could
know.
These books have I didn't realize until I was reading these books, but I was like, oh my God, this is, do you remember the crazy X-Men Forever?
Yes.
It's the same concept.
Basically, yeah.
Chris Claremont writing it?
No. Guggenheim's writing Extinction Agenda, and Marguerite Bennett is writing Days of Future Past. Extinction Agenda, what I just love is that they, in the upper left corner of the cover, they put the box with the heads.
Nice.
And the issue number. But why? But they didn't put the Marvel logo or the price. Like, one box is just empty, which just seems dumb.
What was the time period of the original Extinction Agenda? Is it 90?
That was 91, 92, like around there. That was the big
return to
crossover. No, that was the big crossover before the X-Men, X-Force all relaunch and reboots and everything like that.
Right.
So Extinction Agenda, I love the time period. I'm not loving Carmine DiDomenico's art on it, but I'm dealing with it. But I just like the time period and I like the characters. It's a lot of fun.
He did that Punisher series with Rucka, right?
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Days of Future Past has got Mike Norton on pencils.
Mm. No shit.
Yeah, and he drew a pug in it.
What?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
It's a battle pug?
You should. No, it's just a pug. Yeah. Basically, it's the Days of Future Past timeline, and Kitty and Colossus have a daughter named Christina Pride, and Wolverine has a son named Cameron, and of course,
Moody and look at paintings for a long time.
No, he wears a black tank top though. It's very
odd. A Black Hawks jersey.
No, but I might like I Extinction Agenda. Yes, I got it too. Extinction Agenda is the time period that I like the most, but I'm enjoying Years of Future Past as a story way better. So those are, as the X-Men fan, loving both of these books.
So Ron, I was looking at the Secret Wars issue while you were talking, and I was looking at the page where they snap Cyclops' neck.
Yeah,
and I was wondering if the renumbering of Uncanny wasn't enough to drive you away, would the killing of Cyclops?
No, because he'll be back. Nothing in this nothing in this is going to stay the same. They didn't kill Cyclops, you know.
No, I don't mean here. I just meant if in the future they did it.
He's just the bad guy now.
No, he's not.
But Iron Man was the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah.
For a little while, and it'll change. It'll come around, and they'll change. What is the worst mask in the history of comics?
Yes, I agree. That is the worst mask. You know what I love about Esad Ribic is his surprised reaction eye bulge panel.
Oh, there always are highlight.
With the character's reaction and with the eyes bulging. That's hysterical. I love
that's
it.
That's his signature. It turns out.
Yeah, exactly.
And he gets to do that a lot more with non-Asgardian characters, which is good.
Yes,
because Asgardians are harder to spook.
There's a really good Doctor Strange one in the first half of this issue of Secret Wars, where it's after the reveal of Cyclops as Phoenix or whatever, and when the Thor's hammer goes blue. And
so So I want to touch real quickly on Ultimate End number 3.
Still, is this the last issue?
I don't know. I hope. Still not good, but the best of all of them.
Ron, maybe you can tell us what you think is going on, because we don't know what's going on here.
I'm not reading this.
What
are
you
crazy?
Mean you're not reading this?
I'm not reading this.
This is the end of the Ultimate Universe.
Yep, I'll dance on its grave.
Did you read? I mean, but you've been reading Ultimate Spider-Man all the like. This is their last.
No, they lost me. They lost me. Had to have been about whatever. What happened when they ended the books and then everything scattered into a bunch of different miniseries? Remember that?
Kind of. Yeah.
That's when they lost me. So
this is not the last issue, Josh. It says to be continued in issue 4 is teased at the end.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's another one. I know it's not the last.
I mean, if there's another one, I'll go back and read them. If this means so much to you guys, I'll go back and read them.
The crazy thing about this is that Ultimate Punisher and 616 Punisher meet up with each other, and Ultimate Punisher, being the more hardcore one, kills the white-gloved one.
See, I couldn't tell which one was which.
Yeah, real Punisher always has the white gloves as opposed to Ultimate Punisher. And then goes on a killing spree.
Doesn't seem to make sense.
Well, the Ultimate Punisher never wore white gloves. And then it goes on a killing spree at the end, just murdering supervillains and superheroes alike.
Bagley. I mean, like, everybody looks 26, and I can't abide it, and I don't know. It's not. It doesn't. I know that, like, they were a great match on Ultimate Spider-Man, Bagley and Bendis, and I don't think they are anymore. I just, like, it doesn't.
Oh, agreed.
It doesn't go, unfortunately. Which I think is part of the problem with this story.
I think the art is not even close to being the problem with this story. I think the art is what it is.
Okay,
yeah. I like it, but I don't think it's a problem. The problem is that there's no internal logic to what's happening in this story compared to what's happening in the other books.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing makes any sense.
They were like, so Bendis is off just kind of doing his own thing. Should we say? we'll just put it out.
It goes back to your question about, did they just send a book to the printer or not?
I know that there are editors there, at least. Who should be reading them? At least somebody's responsible.
So, Josh, I think this next book is made only for you, right?
Minimum wage, so many bad decisions, number three. No, it is not. I wanted to bring this up because Bob Fingerman, the creator of the book, had Mark Maron as a guest star in this because he had met him at one point and they were friends for a period. And it turns out that Mark Maron's aesthetic fits in very well with this book. And so when you get to the end, there's a little essay bit about, you know, how he met Maron, and it was oversharing, just like an episode of WTF, and you sort of were friends and then something happened and we weren't, and so forth. And it was really interesting. And I was going to say, if you're out there and you're sort of a WTF fan and you like listening to the first part, the first 20 minutes of the show, Maron's in this, and he definitely, the voice is definitely correct, and the cartooning is really, really good on it. It looks like it's like 90s or early 2000s era Maron, which is interesting. But it was good. Like, it's good, like it always is. But I thought that Maron thing was, I'm like, if this is your thing to boost sales, it's interesting. I can't imagine that's going to work. But on the front of it, it says, you know, guest star TV's Mark Maron. Just like, all right,
hey, whatever it takes.
I don't care. I will read this, and you know, I will read this into the ground forever. It's the same book that I've always liked. But I thought that was interesting. Little bit to it, and it totally was like, I was like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense that they'd know each other. that completely tracks. Apparently, Fingerman was on one of the very early episodes of WTF before anybody was listening to it.
Hmm. Oh wow, fascinating.
So this is my ongoing campaign, Ron, to get Josh to read Garth Ennis' War Stories, because he claims that Garth Ennis is his favorite writer, yet refuses to read War Stories.
That just makes no sense.
It's not that I refuse to. It's that I haven't.
So,
and I recognize the duality of that.
Issue 10, I wanted to mention briefly. I mean, we know the art is the problem.
Is this the end of the Russian-German storyline?
No, this is the first new arc.
Oh, okay.
The reason I bring it up for you is because this new arc, while I don't know the overall story yet, is about a Irish regiment in the British Army during World War II, and mostly about the one soldier in the regiment who is from Northern Ireland, who does not get along with the rest of the soldiers, and even more so doesn't get along with the other British soldiers.
Republic of Ireland soldiers fought with the British Army?
That's what it says.
I knew that. Huh.
It says, well, one guy says, I thought you were neutral, and goes, well, that's why we have our own regiment. And then one guy here from Belfast.
Hmm.
So I think this is right up your alley.
It certainly is.
So that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, I'm taking it on board. I kind of like. I just want to walk into a store one day and see the whole book of them right there, and I'll go, okay, now I'm gonna just get
that's
this.
Fine.
That's kind of where
I don't know how Avatar's trade policy works.
Mm-hmm. I don't either.
So, those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. Go to iFanboy.com. You can find this page for this show. You can talk about these books, other books you read, anything you wanted to talk about in the comment section at iFanboy.com. And now let's do some listener mail, guys. Because we booked
through
those books faster than I thought we would. So I'm making the stretch gesture. Corrine from Florida writes, last year I finally saved up enough money to buy my first piece of original art. I spent 2 days searching New York Comic Con for the perfect piece of art. After thinking about it for many hours, I decided to buy a double-page spread by Rock Upchurch because I love the book and he was incredibly nice and gracious. A few weeks later, he was arrested and taken off the book. Ever since then, I have been at a loss as to what to do with these pages, and the result has been sitting in my closet. I want to hang them up, but it's hard for me to look at those pages and not think about what he did and how it goes against the strong female characters he helped bring to life in the pages of Rat Queens. Have you guys ever bought anything that later lost its appeal due to the creator's personal life, or do you think I'm overthinking this?
Well, first off, I think her name's Corrine.
Corrine.
Corrine. I went to high school with a girl named Corrine. Spelled it the same way.
Okay.
It's a tough thing.
It's tough because I'm definitely playing the art. It's like,
yeah,
it's different than having a book.
It's the Roman Polanski question.
It's the Roman Polanski question. Absolutely.
But
I mean, in the
act of displaying, as opposed to just
sure. And it's also like it's original art. So like it's a thing. It's not like putting Chinatown up on your shelf and wondering if that's okay, or a Woody Allen movie. It's it's the piece of art from the hands of the artist. And like she said, a couple of weeks later, he was arrested. There's charges. He was taken off the book. We don't want to get into any of all that. But it's a thing that's happening. And you've got this piece of art that you really liked previously, and what do you do about it? And I think that's a fascinating question. I don't know if I know what the answer is.
Well, I think my gut says you enjoyed the art, you enjoy the book, it ends there. You know, and because the reality of the fact is that there's a lot of artistic expressions that we've all come to enjoy, be it they be comics or movies or music, and people are inherently flawed and they are not perfect. And there are probably a very long list of bands that I've gone to see that I've enjoyed, or movies that I've seen and enjoyed, or things like that that I really, really like, and that the people who created it probably have done some shitty things that I might not even know about, or sometimes you do know about.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Yeah.
If, for example, there was some piece of John Lennon personal memorabilia, I would still want that, and I would want to display it.
Okay.
Even though I have no doubt that he is guilty of the same thing that this artist is being charged with. So in that sense, is it because he's really famous that I'm okay with it? Or because he's really, really talented?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. But when it gets smaller and closer to home, I tend to think of comics as a smaller thing. And I don't know. Here's the thing, though. If looking at that piece of art makes you think of the bad thing, then it's not doing the thing you wanted to do anymore.
Right.
If every time you look at it, you think to yourself, "Oh, right, that guy."
Yeah.
Then no. The problem is that the value of that piece that you paid for fell off the cliff. That was a problem.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. But is the purchase for value or for whatchamacallit, or for sentiment? You know what I mean? Like, I don't get the sense that she bought it because she's making an investment in his, you know.
But I'm saying you can say, well, I don't like this anymore. At least I can sell it and you're even. It's just a loss.
Well, no, I think you'll still be able to sell it, honestly. I mean, if you know the original art space and all that sort of stuff, especially with a book like Rat Queens that is doing well or that has a following or whatever, you'll be able to sell that. That's not a problem. But I don't know. I mean, Josh said we don't want to get into specific, kind of thing. But the specific thing was, I have some insight into it, and it's not a clean cut. It's a shitty situation in his personal life.
Yeah.
And so it's not like he, did something horrific and now has been, as far as I know, there has been no continuation of the arrest. Like, there's no trial. I think the charges were right. I don't know if the charges
were
dropped or whatever.
But
yeah, that's what I mean. But I'm just saying, like, it's at the end of the day. I don't know. I mean, like, I think that there's a lot of demonizing that goes on with people in that certain situations. And I don't know whether it's deserved or undeserved. You know what I mean? It just seems like, from what I could tell from it, it was a very complicated and private situation. So that's why I fall back on, you love the book, you love the characters, own it, like that. You bought the art. That's awesome. If you still love the book, it doesn't change the characters that came to life for you and give you sentimental reason. That said, I have bought things that later lost their appeal due to the creators involved. Right. So
and you can apply that at sort of any level, and I definitely have too.
Yeah,
I think Josh is right. If it goes back to how you feel when you look at it, if you look at it and see the book and the characters you love and you feel good, then you should put them up. If you look at it and you don't have good associations, then it's not going to ever do its job. And,
right,
and then sell it and buy something that you think will. I think that is probably that is part of the problem with the intimacy of the comics industry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But
agreed.
I mean, I have some Darwin Cook art on my wall, and he said horrible things about Ron.
Yeah, I've got some Darwin Cook art on my wall, and he said some horrible things about me.
So
things about all of us.
Mostly Ron.
All right. Let's move on to the next email. This is from Greg from New Jersey. He says, I recently read Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin's Doctor Strange the Oath and was wondering if there's anything essential BKV I've been missing out on. Keep in mind, I read all of The Private Eye and I'm completely up to date on Saga, and I'm assuming that I will love We Stand on Guard, which comes out this week. P.S. Connor, can you give New Jersey a break? It's not completely our fault of the smell. So,
New Jersey. Those are my favorite Saturday Night Live skits when they used to have the...
No, Patterson?
Yeah.
That Patterson sketch that he... This is the most... It was the most offensive thing they'd ever done. And that you can't even find it. But the one where he is walking around the studio afterwards and he's out of focus in front of the camera.
It's also the funniest thing they've ever done.
It's the funniest thing they've ever done. And Patterson went on the show. He seemed to be fine with it. And Patterson's hilarious. He's just... I don't know what that was all about or where that dude came from, but it was fascinating. Anyway.
He was the lieutenant governor. He spoke at my sister's high school graduation.
Yeah. I know, but it was just this moment in time where he's like, well, I'm governor now. Who?
Apropos of nothing, for some reason the freaking Giuliani sketch popped in my head the other day, and I don't know why, and for like a week I was just going, freaking Giuliani.
Jeez.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay, so I thought this was a super timely question because A, we're old, and B, a new Vaughn book just came out. Meaning that I thought, wow, maybe there's somebody who, you know, found him since Saga and doesn't even know some other kind of underpants that are out there. But, like, there's a ton of great Brian Vaughn things. I mean, obviously, like, the big one I assume you know about is Why the Last Man. That's
his opus.
Masterpiece, you know, his opus, whatever. The first thing I thought of was The Escapists.
Yes.
Under the radar one.
Yeah. By who drew that? Phil Bond did the first issue. And then the other guy, Steve Rolston, drew the rest of it. They're very similar styles. That is
similar to Airboy, without the penises.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite pieces of work that he's done. It's one of my favorite miniseries of all time. I haven't read it in a long time. I'd really like to, but I just remember it just being excellent. It's sort of it's a spinoff of The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And if you can track them, it was Dark Horse, wasn't it?
Yes.
Is that... The fact that you found The Oath was interesting. There was a three-issue
recently because of the movie.
Right. There was a three-issue Wolverine.
Logan.
Wolverine Logan story.
That was great Logan. With Eduardo Risso.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
That's a really good little one you can read. I mean, Ex Machina was very good. I think Ex Machina is sort of comparable to the We Stand Guard thing.
Yeah.
In that I don't know that it was great all the way through, but it was really good. It just wasn't Why the Last Man. It's pretty good. It's super interesting. There's a lot of stuff there. He hasn't done all that much. Oh, and then there's the graphic novel.
Pride of Baghdad. Yes, Pride of Baghdad. Absolutely.
That'll do for you though. That'll do.
That's a lot of reading there.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, that's essential stuff. These are the
Pride of Baghdad is way more essential than Escapists or Logan. But I don't know about
Escapists. I would put Escapists as always the first thing I think of is like the best thing he's done outside of Why the Last Man.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. It's a thing. So, do we want to go down memory lane for a moment?
Sure.
Okay. Devin writes in, said, I was wondering if you could direct me to a really old podcast episode. It's the one where Ron, Josh, and Connor all talked about an egregiously bad X-Men one-shot. I want to say it was after a one-shot aftermath issue of a big event. Everyone reveled in how terrible it was, and by the end, everyone was laughing. And I want to say it was a Pick of the Week podcast. This is really vague, but it was honestly one of the funniest moments. And I think this is interesting. I'll just finish. Anyways, that's what they're looking for. She's getting into comics years later and wants to relive it. So now we have Ron back. Do you guys instantly know what this is?
No.
Like when you read that, you didn't immediately.
Well, I think the thing was, but I don't. This happened a couple of times.
I mean, you put a book in our head before I got to read it, so you stole that reaction from me. But I can think of a couple of things off the top of my head that might be with them. So
see, because my first instinct was that it was actually Sentry Fallen Sun.
I think that's the one that gives you the most bang for your buck because of the fucking dog who just walks off the pit.
Like, and there's the robot.
The book was so bad, the dog left. Even the dog in the book was like, fuck this, I'm out.
And also, Connor was not on that show.
No, it was Tom. But I think
Tom was on that show.
There was a mutant files book where it was Steve Rogers' view of all the X-Men? And we spent the whole episode going through the files randomly.
Wow.
Remember that one, Ron?
No, I don't remember that.
It was after Civil War, and it was like...
I kind of remember it.
It was after Civil War during that horrible period where they didn't know what to do with Steve Rogers, and they made him... They made that one shot issue.
When he wasn't on MySpace?
Yeah, when he wasn't on MySpace, and... Oh, God. Just think about how out of date that was when the MySpace was a thing that they used.
Think about that,
Captain
yeah.
Steve. Anyway, so the Fallen Sun one, if that's the one you're looking for, that's episode 234. It's from May of 2010.
It could be one of the X-Men Forever episodes.
True.
Because that was a run of just insanity.
The thing is this. I thought it was the Century Fallen Sun because there are X-Men in that scene.
Yes, Rogue.
Rogue's definitely in that scene. And so if you don't know for sure, you could think it was an X-Men book. And then the other thing is most of the other X-Men books, Ron would have been the only one who read them.
Yes.
So it would just be him telling us
not
about
necessarily.
Them.
Necessarily. I was
mostly.
Reading some of them, but yeah. But it doesn't mean we weren't laughing hysterically because he would tell them very well.
It's not. He's here now. We don't have to make him.
I'm kind of glad you didn't listen to those shows, Ron, because there was sometime there were Ron jokes.
No, I listened. I heard some of those. I really only stopped listening very recently.
You just finally had enough.
Yeah, I finally hit my
guys.
Limit. Yeah.
I think it's possible. It's Fallen Sun, but I think there really was an issue, and I remember it well. Just don't remember the name of it. Was. Where Steve Rogers wrote, and
I remember
hopefully
that.
Somebody can put this in the comments of what it was, where Steve Rogers wrote the files of the X-Men, and it was his view on what they were. Remember he called one of them, like, implied that she was slutty? Remember that?
I remember that. I totally remember that.
Yeah, that could have been it.
There's that, and then, I mean, the only one that comes to mind, this isn't what she's talking about, but, or he, Devin. Is Devin a man or what?
Devin's
I want to say either. The spelling is a female spelling with
yeah,
the
I
Y.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, I'm sorry, Devin. Dev. I'm going to call you Dev, could be Dev, could be an Indian man. I was thinking of the Red Arrow, the speed. Yeah, was it Red Arrow? The cat,
yeah,
the
yeah, yeah.
crack.
Cry for Justice, James Robinson.
Did he do that?
Yes.
The cat
yes,
in the alley
did.
And the crack?
He gives and he takes away in the same episode.
Yep.
Wow. No, he gave. don't tell me that isn't a gift. Because that's basically Air Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's not all – oh, yeah, no, I can see that.
Yeah.
No, he gave. I remember a lot of – I don't remember any of the other good books from that era, but I remember that one. I don't even think I read it.
No,
oh, man.
In fact, it was better. You didn't.
Yeah, no, I know. I saw the panels.
Well, if there's any longtime listeners out there who know who have some favorite episodes where we talked about really terrible books, which we try not to do on the show as a rule, feel free to drop in the comments and maybe.
That Century one is really like we really do make an effort. We don't like to talk about books we don't like unless they were books that we previously really liked.
And then there's some a mixed opinion on when someone likes and someone doesn't like it.
Yeah, that's fine.
So all I can find is that there was a book called Civil War Files Number 1, but it's Tony Stark's files on superheroes.
Maybe it was Tony Stark and not Steve.
I feel like it was Steve because it's funnier if it's Steve.
Yeah, it is not available digitally. Shocking.
Was that the Captain Steve period?
No, he was still Captain America. Then he died. He wasn't Captain Steve till he came back.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Corinne. Ron, is that what? Corinne?
Corinne. This is the first
email. And Devin. The email is contact@fanboy.com, and that's how they got on the show. You can also leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOY-326-2697. Tell us who you are and tell us where you're from. Keep it around 30 seconds if you do. And Ron, plug your show.
Oh, I don't need to plug my show. Yeah, whatever. If you like cell phones, listen to All About Android.
I liked that Sprint flip phone. I remember that. It had the clear plastic buttons.
On twit.tv/AAA, a little other show I do all about Android phones with my buddy Jason. And hey, if you like the comedy, pretty much my sole purpose on that show is to make jokes. So and apparently I do. Somebody
You're
tweeted
the funny
at me last
one?
Somebody, I am the funny one on that show. Somebody tweeted at me last night, actually, and said you were very funny in the last episode. I said thank you. So
that story fell apart again.
Yeah, it did. That one guy.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you're
several thousand people listen to one guy.
In comics? Is that why you're doing the show?
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
So.
you can head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show. Tell Ron how funny he was. Talk about the books of the week. Find all your other podcasts that we do. our other podcast. You can go back and find old podcasts, for example. And if you can't find an episode in there, check the Libsyn page. There's more there. You have to use Google.
I'm going to work on that. I'm going to figure that out.
There's somewhere. Yeah, you can go to facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter, and you can there you can see what the pick of the week is before we release the show. You can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan, at CSKL Patrick, and at RonXO.
And if you like the show, you can leave a review on iTunes. That would be very helpful. That's how people find podcasts, and it takes only a second of your time to leave us a little quick review. And we really appreciate everybody does that. And do it for any podcast you listen to, even if it's all about Android. And you feel like, you know, it's a good thing to be able to talk about cell phones all the time.
Listen, there's a lot going on.
So any podcast you listen to.
How often do you get a new phone?
How often do I get a new phone?
Yeah.
I think I'm on somewhere between 12 and 18 months.
Okay, that's not terrible.
Yeah, but I've been on the Nexus 5, the LG Google Nexus 5 since it came out, which was when did it come out? I don't know, but it's been a while now. So I'm due for a new one.
I know literally nothing about Android. Like okay. If you put one in my hands, I'm like I don't know how to work this. I don't know anything.
Okay. So the Nexus 5 came out in October 31st, 2013. Wow. So I've been rocking the same phone for the past 2 years. So
wow, whoa. That's like Connor's iPad.
Yeah.
That's much longer.
It's a great phone. They stopped selling it. It's a great little phone. I love it. So everything's getting bigger. I don't want bigger.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Five inches, 5.5 inches, that's my perfect size. So.
All right, till next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
It was just so perfect. I was like, oh my God, he's going to say it. He didn't say my perfect phone.
Oh boy.
Oh, we're going to get letters. I'm Josh.
You're so very special.